Good morning, Gamekai fans. Today's Monday, April the 6th, the year of our Lord 2026, 4626. This is JC Sherbert, and this is Coffee. Hope you had a wonderful Easter weekend with your family, ate some good food, maybe a little ham, all that good stuff. Up and down weekend for Gamecock Athletics, just to be honest. A lot of excitement, 24-hour period, Thursday, Friday. And then, sort of on the baseball diamond, reality set in a bit against Texas. And then the women's basketball team blown out 79-51 by UCLA in the championship game last night. Start with women's basketball. A great season. They did face a lot of adversity and overcame it. And that was a heck of a win against UConn. You wonder. You do have to wonder, and I'm not going to get into the Geno thing. We're going to talk about that on the show. That was obviously interesting. And you had everybody from Magic Johnson to Lil Wayne to Flava Flav to every basketball person out there commenting on it and taking Dawn's side, rightfully so. I don't know that that was a distraction so much as. Sometimes in and what I've noticed with the women's game, especially, you go back to 2017, Mississippi State upset UConn. I think they were undefeated or had only lost one. And they played Carolina in the championship game, and Carolina beat them pretty good. You go back to Iowa, when they beat Carolina in 2023 with Caitlin Clark, they run into LSU in the championship game, lost 102 to 85. Beat pretty soundly. So I think sometimes, when you look at the women's side of things, when you do pull an upset, sometimes that championship game doesn't go well for you. Just an observation and not making any excuses for them. I don't think they make excuses for themselves. But when you shoot 21% in the first half and you let a team like that with a bunch of seniors that are locked in get momentum. And you're right there down 13, but can't get anything going. And then they just carried the momentum in the second half and ran away with the game. Second straight blowout lost in the championship game, but you know what? They're getting there. And as Dawn Staley said in the post game, the idea is to get there. And statistically, you're going to win your share. So it's hard to do, especially nowadays. Congratulations to the UCLA Bruins. It's their first women's championship. Of course, they have. More men's championships than anybody else. But, their coach does it the right way. I think they were, it's a fantastic basketball team. And it was sad to see it come to an end like that after a heck of an NCAA tournament run. That Carolina kind of got beat in the SEC championship game by Texas in the tournament in Greenville. They lost by 17, came back with kind of a dominant run, won every game by. At least 14 points, knocked UConn out, and just wasn't meant to be in the championship game. But this program will be back. There's a lot of good players coming back next year, some coming back off injuries. This will be a taller, bigger basketball team next season. And I'm sure Dawn Staley will attract some new good players, right? She doesn't have a problem with that. So the fams, I'm with you today. Those of you traveling back to Fe from Phoenix today, be safe. Heck of a run, and I think everybody at the University of South Carolina should be proud of the way these players played this run in March and April, and they will be back, most assuredly. They will be back on the baseball diamond. South Carolina, we talked about it Friday, a 9-1 win. Bats seemed to be getting going, and then I guess reality set in. As far as Texas's pitching goes, that kind of, it's really good. Carolina's just faced, with the exception of Georgia, Arkansas, Florida, Texas, they all have great pitching. And, is it the pitching that they're facing? Is it that these guys are just, struggling to get there consistently? I think there have been signs since Monty Lee took over of turning it around. Is it just a function of, hey, we hit the things even out in baseball sometimes. JB makes fun of me because I say my wife and I have this theory that you use up your runs. If you sometimes when you score a bunch in game one and then you can't score the rest of the time. But you can ask Arkansas about that. South Carolina, they put 22 on the board and then 3 and 4 in Columbia. But so they make fun of me for that because it's kind of a superstition. But I do think in baseball sometimes things even out, and that's why you play so many games, and that's why a win technically, whereas in other sports it's one game, it's really a 3-game series. But is it that this team's really not that good, and they're going to struggle to hit all year, or is it a function of pitching? I think we're going to find out. Because the schedule, I don't want to say lightens up because it's the SEC, but Missouri, this weekend's opponent, College of Charleston, the Midway, they don't have the arms that Texas does. So we'll see what happens. But this is a big week. I don't want to, I never say never, never like to put mandates on teams and say, well, they have to do this. Let's just say it would be very beneficial to this ball club as if they want to make a run to the postseason to go 4-0 this week. Yeah, you can't lose the midweek again. I can't lose another midweek. Got to beat Coach Holbrook's team. You hate that, but that's just how it goes. And then you really need to go sweep Missouri. Missouri's better than people maybe anticipated. They're sitting at 3-9 in the conference. They played some competitive ball games. Took 2 of 3 at Kentucky this past weekend. Kentucky was in the top 25. So they're kind of on a bit of a roll right now. Carolina historically has struggled out there. It's a Thursday, Saturday series again, 8 p.m. first pitch Thursday on ESPNU. 7 the next day, 3 the next day, 7 on Friday night, and 3 on Saturday. SEC Network Plus for both of those games. So we'll see how the baseball team does this week. Softball dropped 2 of 3 at Tennessee. Good job getting one of those games, though, for them. They're still hanging in there. I mean, you want to talk about a tough schedule. Those guys, oh gosh, they've played a lot of great teams. Interesting that, they played UCLA earlier this year, and it reminded me of this, that the softball team in the Super Regional last year got eliminated by the Bruins, and then the basketball team last night. So Carolina and UCLA have locked horns. A little bit of history here that the matchup that never took place when John Wooden was coaching men's basketball at UCLA way back in 69, 70, before I was born. South Carolina had the best basketball team it had during the McGuire era. They were undefeated the regular season in the ACC, and then played NC State, Norm Sloan. And back then, there was no shot clock. And John Roach, their star guard, got hurt. And back then, you could not, only the ACC tournament winner got in the big dance. It was, I think, a 32 team, 16 team field, something like that. Carolina at the Carolina Coliseum was set to host the East Regional. So all you had to do is win the regional and go to the Final Four. Final Four was in College Park, Maryland that year. But NC State put them out, and then they couldn't go to the NIT, which was a pretty big deal back then. Because there was a rule that if you hosted, you couldn't go to the NIT. NCAA did not own the NIT at that point. And so they were kind of in competition. And so they didn't go anywhere. It ended after that loss to North Carolina State in the ACC tournament. But the matchup that was supposed to happen all year was South Carolina UCLA. The Gamecocks were number one in the country, UCLA under John Wooden, number two. That didn't happen. I think UCLA ended up winning it all. They had like Western Kentucky and Jacksonville went to the Final Four that season. So maybe these matchups, since the 2010 baseball series, maybe that's just kind of history catching up or something like that, or maybe I'm just blathering on and on. But yeah, tough loss for the women and good win by softball and all that good stuff. And Gamecocks need to beat UCLA next time they play them in a sport. Anyway. That's that for the other sports for this weekend. Football wise, we had a Rob Williams and I kind of collaborated on a football intel briefing released Easter Sunday for those of you sitting around and reading. on Easter. I hope you got that. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, go to insidethegamecocks.com and you can get that stuff right in your inbox. If you want a direct link to read it, you still can go to at Gamecock Show. There's a tweet there. Also, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/insidethegamecocks, and check it out. I believe there's a post on YouTube too. To go check it out, read it, and hit the subscribe button in the upper left-hand corner to get it in your inbox whenever we put one up. But like once a day, maybe once every couple of days. But Jamie Bradford's got his baseball bulletin, so if you love Carolina baseball, you'll want to read that once or twice a week. We got some basketball notes coming out and about the men and all that good stuff. Speaking of, I can tell you that there's some things cooking in men's basketball behind the scenes. We'll talk about that on the show. That's scheduled for the show because we like to talk football here on Coffee, right? But anyway, the football intel report was very good. Lots of stuff. Rob and I both sort of talked to some folks. I'd say all of them are coaches, maybe like one or two were not, but either high school coaches or practice observers or contacts within the program to put that together. And real personnel focused, like the spring is. You want to know what players are looking good in practice, what players are maybe needing some work. What's the depth chart looking like? I've been through that before. That's what practice coverage is for. But there's there are a lot of interesting quotes in there from different people, and it's always good. I like to think that I know what I'm looking at most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time when it comes to that sport. I think Rob does too. I think Bradford does too. All of our staff at ITG, has some great observations and all, but a lot of times too, you guys, if you want to hear what I have to think, you can tune into the show. You can follow me on X. Next month, you can get back on the message boards and ask me questions. That kind of gets repetitive, redundant, and boring, doesn't it? So it's good to talk to hear from like other people that coach the game because they have different opinions. All of them have different opinions. So that's how we collaborated on it, and it was fascinating to hear. Some of the stuff that came back. And offensive line wise, there were several unprovoked because we were going to put it out unvarnished. If somebody said this offensive line needs to get better. And I did hear that from one source, then we were going to put that out. But most said it's going to be better than people think. These guys were playing pretty good. And that happened sort of toward the end of practice last week. The offensive line and the offense in general sort of responded. You go through the scrimmages, it's defense ahead, and then offense, you want your offense to respond. If you get to your second or third scrimmage and the defense is still kicking their tail and they're not responding, that can tell you sometimes there's some work to do, right? So, you gotta kind of read the tea leaves when it comes to practice. And what takes place with the units in a team setting. You still can't really tell what's going to happen when they play Kent State, Mississippi State, Alabama. Those are the Towson, this year. You still can't really predict that accurately, but it can give you an idea of some of the areas that maybe the coaches are thinking, well, we got to get better here, in practice. Because that's why they practice. They tape every practice and all that good stuff. That was encouraging. Shedd Surratt has settled in a little bit at left tackle from what I've heard. That's good. I don't think he's going to be the left tackle. I think Peak's going to come back and be the left tackle, but Shedd can play the right tackle. I said last week, I think Shedd can play anywhere on the offensive line you want him to. And he's consistent. Was he perfect? Was he dominant last year? I wouldn't say that, but he was for compare him to some of the other guys that were older. He was a true freshman. He was more consistent than just about all of them, which was telling. But and then they move him out to right tackle, and he was, big tree. Had some games he was fantastic. This was his whole career at South Carolina. So hopefully at Nebraska, maybe they could get a little more consistency out of him because he's got potential. But he would have some games. He looks like an All-American. He have some games like the Ole Miss game was so bad that so they moved a true freshman out there to take his place, and that position got better. So Shed was more consistent out there, but so good news on him. You know, I think the interior with Carter Miller at center and then Kodjo Poku to his right and I think Purvis to his left. That looks like it's going to be what happens. And then at right tackle, Dane Arnett is holding that down right now. I've heard he's done some nice things. You know, depth there, they needed to keep developing that. Darius Gray coming in, I think, will help. Ashton Mazone, I think, will help. You know, I don't know about Neff Jiwa in the first year, but, you know, it'll all help. But Zion Giles, as a true freshman, has done some nice things as well. Has this unit arrived? No, I think they definitely need to get Peak back. If you can get Peak back and the progress that's been made in practice, because they're blocking a pretty salty front each and every day in practice, it's going to get them better. You know, then I think you can maybe see some light at the end of the tunnel. But it's hard to sit here and talk. I'm not saying positively, but it's hard to sit here and predict success on the offensive line because you had a lot of good talent coming back last year and it was a disaster. That said, is that fair to hold last year against a group that's a bunch of new players, very few holdovers? Surratt is one of them. And a new coach and a new scheme? Probably not. But I know you guys and gals are my audience. And I know you just probably don't want to hear how great the offensive line's going to be. I think that the coach that told us better than expected, and another coach that said pretty good, and another contact that said of the three best performers, you know, here's what stood out today. And he mentioned Lenore Sellers. He mentioned Isaiah Augustov. And so the offensive line was something that caught his eye. So maybe that's working. Now, another contact said it seemed in his eyes, and this is someone that's coached at the Power Four level. He said he'd like to see him get a little collectively stronger and play stronger. And what that means is they need to get more of a push. And oh God, everybody collectively groaned. Because we're probably all tired of seeing these big 300-pound guys not get a push. Now, what he observed was or was not a lot of team stuff. It was more like drill work and stuff, one-on-ones. And he said, you know, some of the D linemen were getting the best of the O linemen. He said they looked the part, they looked physically good. But wants to see him a little stronger. And he says it's kind of weird because that position, you know, you look at kind of their ability to move bodies and their offensive linemen, that's their job, versus, you know, how physically awesome the rest of the team looks. And he said it's kind of puzzling. So here's the explanation. I can't explain what happened last year with that. Because the guys looked kind of, they were big, but they're a little out of, looked kind of out of shape and some things like that. You can't be out of shape and play anywhere on this offense. So they, and that's not what he was saying. Wasn't saying out of shape. But you look, most of these guys have not had very long coming from the portal in Luke Day's and Chip Morton's strength program. So the takeaway there is these guys have to have a good summer strength-wise. It's important to make what they call in weightlifting gains. Mike Morgan says, gains, bro. Gains at the gym. So you got to make some gains, man. And I think that's, you know, that there's a normal explanation for it. But based on kind of last year and that, you know, then it's hard to kind of just sit there and say, well, they'll obviously just do that. Yeah. So that's something to watch, something to look out for on the offensive line moving forward. But I was encouraged, just kind of from the standpoint of it's a red flag if you don't start hearing that as practice moves along. It's a red flag if your offense isn't really catching up. And it's not that the offense in the first scrimmage was bad. Early on, there were some struggles. Beamer mentioned that they didn't finish well, which is something that absolutely has to happen this year. You can't have these drives where you go stall, you know, you're moving the ball and then you stall. I don't think it will happen this year as often, but man, you start to get a little momentum, and that just kills you, and it hurts the momentum of your team and all that. But I said they had to finish, and I did hear in the first scrimmage they started responding, started running the ball with the backs pretty well. It was a very windy day during the first scrimmage, and so the passing conditions were not ripe. It wasn't ripe to throw it around the yard. Steve Spurrier said that. They used to ask him about rain. He said, "Well, rain, shoot. Our receivers know where they're going and all that good stuff." But the wind, he hated the wind. And he was just like, "Oh, wind," because his passing game was so precise. In other words, in the game against Clemson, for example, in 06, I can't believe it's 20 years ago. You notice Blake Mitchell in that ball game against a very fast and athletic Clemson defense that kind of sat back and played coverage. Carolina was just eating them up with these little routes. Boom, 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 boom. Epic Spurrier, right? And the draw play. Well, what they did, from what I was told, now, this who knows if this is kind of like through the grapevine years later. Most of the routes you're in 10 yards and cut, Well, in that game, Spurrier adjusted it and said it's 8.5. And so it surprised them because it cut them. They're expecting 10. Genius, right? Well, that's why he's a genius. And so it was so precise that the wind would kind of, really throw it off a little bit. And he always, Spurrier didn't always have the strongest armed guys at quarterback. But going back to Florida, Danny Werfel was not like super strong arm guy. So just an accurate passer. So that's the wind probably wasn't, conducive for that. It wasn't for field goal kicking either that day. But they did start running the ball in that scrimmage and stuff. And then you hear, well, they're responding, so that's good. And so that's a good thing. Another contact, the same contact that talked about the offensive line, said this though, because he's coached at the Power Four level. He's like, "Well, sometimes at South Carolina, when we'd scout them or whatever, they didn't always look like an SEC team. They were always missing something. They're a good team under Coach Spurrier." And this was kind of before Spurrier got it rolling because they did have dudes, 2010, 2013. But he said, they didn't always look, they were deficient talent-wise in some parts. They kind of just made do and outcoach people or whatever. And they had some stars. He said, "This team definitely looks the part of an SEC team." So there's big dudes everywhere, athletic, fast. They look like an SEC football team. You don't win games with the eyeball test. If you look like an SEC football team, all that means is you got a chance. It's also progress from a roster standpoint. If you remember Paul Feinbaum before 2021, of course, that team went 7-6 and won the Mayo Bowl before Beamer's first year. He was saying that he talked to somebody when he came on his practice, and they were like, "Where are the players?" That was literally the quote, "Where are the players?" Well, the players are obvious now. So that's good. That's a tribute to recruiting and portal work and all that. But as is the case with the O-line last year, you can look all you want, great all you want, but if you don't play well, you're not going to win. So I think that's just a seat at the table kind of thing, right? But they do. They've got athleticism all over the place. Beamer mentioned how fast the football team was. I think that's good. If you're going to run Kendall Browne's offense and Clayton White's defense and be aggressive on special teams like Beamer wants to do with Matthew Smiley, I think the faster you are, the better. I do think you have to be physical, but the faster you are, the better. I think you have to be strong in the trenches, obviously. So I thought that was a positive thing from the roster standpoint. And then the key to getting stronger on the, or why getting stronger on the offensive line is going to be a big key, or playing stronger, because the weight lifting and weight room stuff probably checks out, right? Playing stronger, getting a push. That's important because in Kendall Browne's offense, they run a lot of power. It's not just a, and G.A. Mangus talked about this during his interview. It's not just a line up and zone you to death kind of thing. Now, if you zone you to death, you kind of get by with just athletic dudes that just get in the way and the back does the rest. To do that with the zone, though, you have to have like a Heisman level running back, which, well, there's maybe three or four of them in college football. Carolina's running backs are good. I think they got a lot of good players. I think they'll be fine there. But do they have them? They don't have like a Marcus Lattimore or an Adrian Peterson or Ashton Jeanty type guy. And not a lot of teams do. A lot of good, solid running backs around the country. So, Ahmad Hardy. I don't know that they have an Ahmad Hardy on the roster or Kawan Lacey on the roster. Maybe they do because nobody'd heard of Ahmad Hardy or Kawan Lacey. Maybe they do, and we're wrong. But, this particular contact didn't really see that out there. So we'll see kind of how that goes. But, that's the key to the zone thing. So you want to run power, and then Kendall Briles likes to run RPOs off of that. That's why I love his offense because it's not just this fancy sort of, trick you to death, run you to death kind of non-physical thing. I mean, they do it a different way than teams will just line up and bully you, but they do try to power you. And then you run the RPOs and stuff like that. Yeah, it's kind of it's a central tenet of his offense. So you have to be able to run power effectively. And so that requires an offensive line that can get a push. And so that's what needs to happen there. And that kind of leads us to the main topic, which is Lenore Sellers. So Lenore's obviously did not have the best year last year. There were a number of reasons for that. Obviously what they were asking him to do, in my opinion, maybe shot the whole thing in the foot before it got started. But he had some things too, where honestly, because people will bring this up all the time. They don't, he didn't, he missed all these open receivers. Yeah. Some of them were not open. And I had somebody tell me that one time that if you look at the other angle, we're all looking at the ball and the side angle, guys look open, but this coach had his laptop and he said, look at this angle. He's like, if he threw it here, there's this corner right here, it's going to break on the ball and pick it. So there were some things like that. Now there were some where the guy was open and he missed him. And then there were some where the guy was open, he threw the ball and he airmailed it or put it in the dirt. That happened. When you're struggling on offense, though, and I used to say this during the Jake Bentley era, because he would overthrow a pass. It was when Kurt Roper was the OC. He would overthrow a pass and people would lose. It was a touchdown and he just overthrew it. People would lose their mind and just roll that kid under the bus. He suffered a People really back then didn't needed to give him a break. But because the offense was so restrictive and because they just didn't, Kurt Roper even said it when he was here. I don't like to just shoot. I like to point and aim or point and shoot. I like to point and aim and shoot. And that just wasn't, that's no way to run offense. And he's sitting there kind of like some of the guys around here under Beamer, just set this up and kind of an NFL mindset, which was surprising because like the first offensive coordinator under Beamer, after Bobo, of course, he only spent 1 year in the NFL, so he came back with all this other stuff. But I think Kurt Roper's kind of figured it out now at NC State. But anyway, so everything's magnified when you're struggling. If you overthrow one, but you're coming right back and scoring touchdowns, nobody cares, right? But when you struggle and it's such a premium and you miss one that could have been a difference-making play or extended drive, yeah, people are going to notice. And honest to God, I'm not just downplaying it there. It's up to great players when you are struggling to make the plays that are there. So it's on him totally, and that's something he's got to get better at. But I do think that the plan is better. So there's going to be no shooting yourself in the foot before you even get started this year. And so largely it's going to be up to Sellers. And I can tell you this right now, we talk about feedback from practice. Every time I get feedback, there's some players that get mentioned a bunch. Isaiah Augustov is one. Julian Walker is one. But Lenore's always gets mentioned as looking good. Even when wouldn't say, well, the defense got the better of the offense back, last Saturday, the windy day. Lenore Sellers, Sellers looks good. I've heard he's leaned up a bit. Now, I don't know weight-wise where he's at, but he looks more leaner and moves around a little faster. I mean, I don't think he was slow last year by any means. I think he was moving slower because probably he was processing and thinking too much, and that happens. But he just looks different, you know, as far as moving around. And this offense is designed. Yeah, they're not going to. Kendall Briles isn't going to sit back there and do a bunch of slow developing 7-step drops and let him get sacked. Not to say there's never any drop back passing, but this whole thing's designed to play to his strengths. Like, what does he do well? And what they're going to do between now and the season is they'll sit there and they'll run a lot of things in practice and they'll figure out what's good and they'll rep it over and over and over. And then that's part of, I think, and what a contact told Rob Williams is that this thing Beamer's doing where they rep everything over and over and over the first couple of days and then they don't move on to something else the next day. It's just retention. That's kind of, you know, one of the contacts said, I think that what Coach Beamer's doing has helped the O-line mentally. I mean, like as bad, you know, as bad as they were physically at times, if you eliminate the mental mistakes from the offensive line last year, it's probably a different season for that room. Probably a different season. But it's tons of mental errors, not just the penalties, the, you know, the missed assignments, the going the wrong direction, all this stuff. So this is good. So this also helps Lenora Sellers, the quarterback, because the more you rep something, it becomes muscle memory, right? And he's taken to that and done well. Now Kendall Briles is going to talk to the media today, so hopefully, you know, they ask him some questions about how Lenora's has looked. But I've heard he's looked really, really good. I've heard he's been more accurate in practice. I've heard the offense fits him. My power four coaching contact said that, you know, he studied Briles' offense and he studied Lenora Sellers, and he said this is a great fit because they're going to design things to where he's not having every guys in his face all the time, right? You're going to get him out on the move, you know, and if the offensive line is leaky in pass pro, he's going to get it out quick. They're going to run a lot of quick game, a lot of quick, you know, quick, not slow developing plays, quick developing plays. And they're going to line up and go fast, so as fast as they can. So I think that helps. I think that's kind of Lenoris's game. I think that just strips out all the, and I keep saying crap. Let's say the porridge or the oatmeal. It's like you got a bunch of oatmeal sloshing around in your head. It just takes that, cleans it out. I don't know if that's my best work there, oatmeal in your head. I'm going to start using it though. The oatmeal in your head is out, you know, and you just go play ball. The mental part of it and all the stuff he learned under Dowell Loggins and then Mike Shula, he still got that in him. You know, he's got that training. So when he gets to the NFL, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. You got all day to work on it in the NFL. You don't have to worry about this, that, and the other. You know, you are with a franchise that's going to put pieces around you. You know, and that's one of the reasons why, no matter how talented you are, rookie quarterbacks struggle up there because it's just more complex. And you try to throw that on a college kid, it's like taking calculus when you're in eighth grade. It just never has made any sense to me. And it's blown up in people's face around here more than I care to remember, but that's not Kendall Briles. In fact, people criticize him and his dad because their quarterbacks put up big numbers in college and then they kind of struggle to adapt in the NFL. Why? Because it's not that complex. You're just reacting and going, and you're doing things that make sense. It's all about, you know, you can apply this to life these days. Common sense. Use common sense. It's a common sense offense. For the college level. But, you know, all that aside, we said we'll talk all summer about Kendall Briles' system and how much I think it's a good deal and all that, dive in and out of it. And again, he'll be talking today and we'll pass along anything on the show that we hear. I think that, but all that aside, Lenore Sellers still has to go execute. It's not like an execution-free offense, especially in the RPO game. And I asked, I was like, well, how's Lenore's executing that? He's like, good. He's like, I would guess that early on, especially in games, you know, it's going to be a lot of one read stuff where you get one read and, you know, let's go or something like to, you know, something simple, keeping it simple, not a lot of complexities. But you know, I think that if he can execute that, and when I say execute, I mean it's not as there are some steps. You know, it's not the pro style drop back here, go, you know, eyes go here. It's more like, okay, do we hand off? Do I keep and throw? Do I keep it and go around the end? Do I keep it and go up the middle? Kind of some triple option principles from way back in the day with all of this. But so you got to do that. And then in the throw game, the one thing Lenore Sellers probably just accuracy wise needed to work on, and I've heard he's hit a lot of them this spring, is that short and intermediate passing game. And the other part of that, though, is the offense at Carolina, they just hadn't done a lot of it. You know, the slants and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure he can throw it, but it seemed like they were trying to keep the ball out of the middle of the field. Well, there's going to be some stuff that attacks the middle of the field this time around and out in the flat and all that. Those passes out in the flat, the bubble screen stuff, I think that's something he really needs to work on. I've heard he's gotten better at that, but this offense, you know, with the, because last year after Furry took over, they started doing a lot of it. And they weren't always pretty, folks. You know, sometimes you start airmailing those or one hopping those, you know, sometimes that turns into a fumble, that kind of thing. So that those are all the things he needs to work on, and he's progressed in that department. And so in conclusion, I do want to say, not according to me, but according to folks that have watched, he's looked good and he's made progress and he looks comfortable and like the Lenore Sellers we all hoped he would be. Now, this is just practice. He had really good practices last year, but there is something fundamentally different about his tempo and kind of heat him within the scheme of this offense that if it translates to the field during games, is going to be very positive for him. Now, bottom line, if South Carolina wants to have a good turn, a big turnaround, which is what everyone's hoping, is that last year was just an anomaly and they've got the right coaches, they've got a lot of good players. You hope the schedule's a little different, right? A little, I'm not going to say easier, but teams that, you know, you're not going to have three teams having their best years ever on the schedule. Just normal old Florida, preferably Florida. I say normal old Florida. What is that really? You know, Florida the last 4 or 5 years, maybe a little better. You know, Tennessee of the last two. I'll even take the playoff Tennessee team. You know, that Arkansas kind of remains Arkansas. Mississippi State remains Mississippi State. That's right, all four SEC games right there. You know, and you hope maybe Alabama isn't as takes a step back a little bit. A&M, you know, you got them at home, that kind of thing. The only one I don't think there's much of a chance that they take any kind of step back is Georgia, because I think Georgia will actually be better than they have been, and they won the SEC the last 2 years. People don't talk about that enough. But anyway, you hope the schedule cooperates. But for a big turnaround, regardless of all that. Regardless of the scheme, regardless of the Lenore Sellers has to have a great year, because that's how it is. Your quarterback has to have a great year now. What could that look like? Potentially very, very good, as we've all seen. But he's got to get there. It's got to translate to games. But I can report to you, folks, that there's been a lot of progress this spring. He looks like his normal self, and we'll see if it sticks. And I don't bet against Lenore Sellers. I'll tell you that right now. All right. The morning show, Whittle on All Things, coming up at 10 a.m. We'll be along with the show. It's Meatloaf Monday. So I have some meatloaf facts for you. And we'll continue to talk about that, talk a little basketball and all that good stuff. This is JC Sherbert's Coffee. Thanks for listening. I'm out. Holla.